All right, let's talk to Eric Zorn now. He's the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter containing commentary, comedy, and more. He'll sign you up if you just email ericzorn@gmail.com, and if you pay a little bit, you get the premium edition. Hi, Mr. Zorn. How are you?
Hey, John. Good. I really love this bracket tournament idea that you're floating about the things made in Illinois, and I'm just curious it's a really great idea.
So what do we grow in Illinois? Corn and beans. This guy makes the whiskey out of the corn. We make tractors. We don't make Boeing airplanes. The headquarters is here. But what is manufactured in Illinois? And then do brackets. And I haven't clicked through. I just know my friend Nick is in there. What else comes to mind, Zorn? I go, okay, made in Illinois. Go. What have you got?
Boy, I just don't know. I don't know what's made in Illinois
Isn't
anymore.
That a shame?
I know, like, zippers were invented in Illinois and Ferris wheels and stuff, but I really don't know what's made here. Made exclusively here or?
Go ahead, Steve.
I can tell you last year's winner was the Komatsu mining truck.
Oh, that's a competitor of Komatsu is Caterpillar's principal competitor around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So wait, but that's made in Illinois now?
It is, yes.
Touche, mm-hmm. Caterpillar. Wow. All right, so really, Komatsu was the winner last year?
Yeah.
That's got to hurt. I mean, Caterpillar has been a huge employer in central Illinois and still is.
Yeah, other finalists included Mullins Imitation French Dressing. let's see.
You know, and what do I want to be? I mean, I don't know if we were ever a massive manufacturing location because we're farmland here. But, okay, keep going, Steve. What else?
The MQ-25 Stingray Drone Refueler, which is an unmanned aircraft with aerial refueling capabilities built by Boeing in Illinois.
Cool.
And the Mod Box by Enviro Buildings, which is a strong, it's kind of a pop-up building that is made in Quincy.
All right.
Okay.
Good to know. I just think of a lot of the services we provide out of Illinois. Now, Erica.
Aren't there some car plants? Like there was that one up by Belvedere. And it makes a specific Chrysler or something like that. I can't remember. I used to pass it on the toll.
Yeah, it's still there. Rivian down in...
That's right.
Rivian?
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
So,
it's a little sexier than drone parts replacement.
Well,
thing.
Are you being sarcastic? I think that's kind of cool. You do want to be on the cutting edge, right? Don't we have
some... It's kind of cool, but no one's heard of it, though, right? I mean...
What'd you say, Eric?
No one's heard of it, so...
Oh, I know. That's the good thing, at least, about this. Makers Madness, MadnessIL... .com, makersmadnessil.com. Vote accordingly. Yeah.
Well, John, you're kind of the bracket king of Chicago, aren't you? I mean, you've had bracket tournaments on your show for decades, right?
Yeah, we've done that, a lot of them here.
They're fun.
In fact, Eric, we could do a brackets of brackets. Like, what's your favorite brackets? Speed
that
jokes brackets?
That'd be very meta. That's a good idea, though.
Pizza brackets? Made in Illinois brackets? Cool hair by TV anchors brackets. You could go on all day like this.
Axios Chicago likes bracket tournaments also. So it's we could do. That would be a really fun tournament. Bracket of brackets.
I missed the story in the Sun Times yesterday that they're not going to do editorials anymore. Letters, op-eds, columns will continue, but the Chicago Sun Times is not going to sound off as a newspaper. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. There was an article by Tracy Brown, who's the chief content officer of Chicago Public Media, which is the organization that runs WBEZ-FM and the Sun-Times now. And the Sun-Times, as I think we've spoken about on the show, certainly on the podcast, has been losing a lot of employees. They lost about 20% of their staff for buyouts just in the last month or so. And part of the buyouts, they lost three of their members of their editorial board, or their five-member editorial board, including Lorraine Forte, who was the editor of the page. So they just decided to discontinue doing editorials, and they're going to run guest essays, and they're going to continue running their columnists, although really the only news columnist they have left is our friend Neil Steinberg. And they're going to basically abdicate that role of a newspaper of having an institutional voice. And I'm of a mixed mind about that. I always have been about editorials, because it's unclear to me, and I've, you know, worked at the Tribune for 41 years, and I know the business inside and out, but it's unclear to me sometimes who is speaking when an editorial comes out, editorial, you know, blasting Mayor Johnson for something. Who is saying that? Is it the institution of the newspaper? Is it just the couple of people who are assigned to write editorials? Is it the publisher ordering the newspaper to write something? I mean, just last week, the Alden papers, which Tribune is one of them, ordered all of its newspapers to publish a Tribune editorial about artificial intelligence on their front pages. And that was, you know, the owners were dictating that. So it's unclear who is speaking. And I prefer to know the writer and the voice who's talking. So it's not like a great loss to me that when a paper doesn't have an editorial voice. Magazines don't have an editorial voice, and TV stations and radio stations don't have editorial voices. They have individual voices, lots of individual voices, but they don't have one institutional voice, which I think is a confusing concept.
But it is an informed voice. You know, it's sort of like endorsements for candidates at election time, which more and more newspapers are going away from because, well, I think they're cowards. But what, you know, or they're just afraid, you know, they don't want to endorse the wrong candidate and make people mad, and then they lose even more revenue and more subscribers. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's not cowardice. But I like endorsements, even if I don't use them. And I like editorials, even if I don't agree with them, because they're informed voices. They're smarter than me. I believe everybody that writes editorials for big city newspapers knows more about those issues than I do. And if I read one, so I'll read a Wall Street Journal editorial, and then I'll read one in the Tribune or the New York Times, and sometimes I get a different perspective, but it's an informed voice. And I think it's a loss, Eric.
Yeah, well, it certainly is a loss for the Sun-Times as in terms of its influence and prestige, that when an editorial comes out and it says, Mayor Johnson, you must do this. That has a lot more weight than if Neil Steinberg sometimes or Laura Washington from the Tribune or someone comes out and says that. It has more weight, even though it may just be one person writing that editorial for the editorial board and getting signed off by the editorial board editor. It may just be that it's one person's opinion who is given the responsibility of writing in the voice of the entire newspaper. A lot of people think that the editors and the writers of a newspaper are part of that process that makes editorials, and that's not the case. It's usually a small number of people. Now, the New York Times has a large editorial board. The Sun-Times had five people. I think the Tribune has about four or five people right now. So it's a small group of people, and they're smart people. I've worked next to the Tribune editorial board people for many years. They are very smart people, very informed. You're right about that.
And they care.
And they included people like Steve Chapman, who is a brilliant columnist who would write editorials as well as writing his columns. And so there is that sense. So the paper does give up some leverage. And one thing I pointed out in my newsletter this morning was that the Sun-Times endorsement of Lori Lightfoot back in the first round of the 2019 mayoral campaign, where there were 12 candidates running or something like that, right? The Sun-Times came out with a very strong editorial saying Lori Lightfoot is the woman for this job, is the person we want to elect. And I really think that changed that campaign, and I think it changed her fortunes. I don't know if she would agree with that, but that was a really important moment in that campaign, because it sounded like, you know, the Chicago Sun-Times is getting behind Lori Lightfoot.
Well, what are you saying here? But you're saying that, so that's an endorsement for editorials. Why are you then not loving the fact that, why aren't you missing the editorials from the Sun-Times then?
I'm saying it's a mixed blessing. I'm saying that the paper, in doing this, is forfeiting a certain amount of power and influence. And that is the nature of this beast. I have a question or a problem with the whole nature of the beast, because people don't really realize who is writing these, who's behind these editorials.
Well, but hold on a second. But that, you know, how many people are supposed to write an editorial? 100 or one? If it's one person, though, and they're so important that they are the voice for the paper or the publisher, then that tells you the inclination of that institution, of that paper. It's telling, even if you don't agree with it. I think it's important to know what the position of the Tribune is or the Sun-Times is. And whoever is writing it, clearly the people that are making the decisions are aware of what that editorial position is going to be.
So, right. It's like a group column, essentially. There's a group of people, and you know, maybe two, three people who would agree. And having sat in on all these meetings where editorial positions are decided, I can tell you sometimes, you know, maybe two or three people say, like, yeah, let's say this. And everyone's like, all right, I'll go ahead and say that. I know from my behind-the-scenes knowledge that when the Tribune endorsed Gary Johnson for president, the editorial board was deeply divided about that. And in fact, that decision was not the decision of the majority of the editorial board, but a minority of that.
Do you think they really wanted Gary Johnson to be president?
I don't know what they wanted. I think they just didn't want to endorse Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. And they felt like that was their only, that was a way to slip around that.
What do you make of that? What do you make of that?
Well, I thought it was cowardly for them to do that. On the other hand, you said earlier that it was cowardly for newspapers to abdicate the role of endorsing candidates. The Sun-Times can't because of its not-for-profit status.
Right.
But yeah, I think a lot of papers, including the Alden papers, including the Tribune, have pulled back on endorsing for major races. They don't endorse for president and governor and senator anymore because they feel like the voters can make up their own minds about that. And they can read pro and con essays and make up their own minds. There are a lot of races, the smaller races, the clerk races and the treasurer races and the comptroller races and things like that, where people don't really follow the issues, don't really know who's running, and it's very important for them to have an informed, somewhat neutral opinion. So those are important, and the Tribune is still doing those. Tribune has just offered a whole bunch of endorsements in some of the suburban races.
It's always helpful when you're voting for judge. I have voted pretty much every election. I don't think I've missed an election to vote since I was eligible as a voter, and I can promise you I have never once made an informed decision on comptroller. The Tribune interviewed all these people, and they seem to be sober and upright. So who did they say? And then maybe you do remember a commercial, or maybe you remembered them on Bob Surratt's show, and you go, that seemed like a nice, friendly, smart person. They're sincere. Okay, they get my vote. Sometimes you just got to be in the game. Eric Zorn, the publisher of the Picayune Sentinel, a longtime Tribune columnist, now has a weekly newsletter you'll get for free if you email ericzorn@gmail.com. About this, Pete Hegseth, about this administration breach, they accidentally included a reporter over at The Atlantic, Jeffrey Goldberg, in their war plans in Yemen, and it's embarrassing, among other things. I did see a couple of stories today that do say that the U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, that's CISA, the people that set the rules and policies for how we're going to communicate at the highest levels of government, do allow for using encrypted independent services like Signal in some instances. I don't know if this was one of those instances or not. And clearly, including a journalist from The Atlantic, and specifically a reporter that has been unkind to the administration, was not their idea. So it's a total screw up on that level. And if you said, what was the biggest mistake of all? Was it that, or was it that, or was it the fact that the president at first said he didn't know anything about this? Eric, what's your quick thought about all of that?
Lock them up, right? I mean, isn't that what they were saying when Hillary Clinton was accused of having an insecure email server in her house? It's a massive screw up, clearly, including the reporter, the editor from The Atlantic in their thread. It was just an amazingly dumb thing to do. And I think for when you're planning military attacks, you're supposed to go into these secure rooms where phones aren't allowed and
right.
Use highly secure technology. And it is troubling and weird that many, many hours later, when President Trump was asked about it, he acted like he had heard nothing about it. And it's one of the things where you think the chief of staff, as soon as this happened, would have rushed into the Oval Office and said, Chief, we got a real problem here. We got to deal with this. But the idea that he either wasn't informed or was lying about what he knew about it is also troubling too. The whole thing is just, it feels like amateur hour, doesn't it?
Well, these are people who are new to some of these agencies or services. This, though, you wonder who made up the original, like if you're doing a Zoom chat, somebody puts out the appeal to everybody, the invitation. So somebody put out an invitation and how this person was included. And I wonder if there's going to be a little more than navel gazing if they say, wait a minute, what were you doing with that guy's number? And were you communicating with that reporter, that editor at The Atlantic on the side? You would think somebody would lose their job over something like this. That remains to be seen. One more thing. I don't have time to talk to you about Tesla, but are you done talking about the baseball season, Eric, and the schedule being too damn long?
I guess I am done with it, but I do feel like, you know, the majority of my readers think that the season is too long. There's no way, though, that baseball is ever going to cut back on the season.
Why do you think baseball season is too long?
Well, because first of all, it stretches into these cold months where you're going to be playing games where it's freezing.
No, they're going to be playing games. You're not going to be playing the games.
Well, or I'll be sitting in the stands, or not.
You won't.
And also till the end of the year, the World Series is going to be often played in very cold environments too. And the season, just like each game, is just kind of rolls out slowly, and there's no urgency to a lot of these games. The best teams will lose 4 out of 10 games, and the worst teams will win, you know, what, 3 out of 10 games. So it's like the games don't have, because there are so many of them, no individual game tends to have much importance until like late August or early September.
Yeah.
So the whole season feels like it's just kind of, and you can see it when you look at how people are spending their time and they're watching, whether they say it's their favorite sport. These polling from Gallup shows that, you know, people under 30, baseball is barely on the radar for them.
Like it would be pretty amazing if they said, okay, the new Major League Baseball season is 16 games. Wow, would you care about the outcome of the home opener? Those two we lost in Japan, our season is screwed. It's over.
Yeah. I don't think 16, but I think probably more like, you know, 80 games or something, the way that the NBA is. But.
All right. I'm going to argue with you about this on our Mincing Rascals podcast. We'll drop another episode of that tomorrow. You going to be able to join us, EZ?
I'm there for you, yeah.
That's Eric Zorn. He'll email you his newsletter if you email ericzorn@gmail.com.